All right, let's dive into this one. The book of Job. Looks like you've given us quite a bit to unpack here. Even a lecture by Dr. Elaine Phillips.
Yeah, it's a pretty dense book full of, well, big questions about suffering and God's role in it all.
Definitely. It seems like you really want to get to the heart of this book, you know, figure out what it's all about. So what's the deal with this guy, Job? He's like the poster child for righteousness right from the beginning, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Blameless, upright, the whole nine yards.
But then, wait a minute, later on, it hints that maybe he isn't completely sinless? Like, there's this complexity to his character.
Totally. It's not so black and white, right? Mm. The text kind of suggests that even the most righteous person, well, they're still human.
Makes him way more relatable, I think.
Definitely. Nobody's perfect. And then there's that scene in heaven where God and Satan are talking about Job.
Yeah. It's like God is almost putting Job on display. Kind of like a test. What's up with that?
Right. It's like, is God initiating Job's suffering or is he allowing it? Big questions there.
And it really gets you thinking about God's role in suffering, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. It's one of those things that you can ponder for, well, a long time. But before we get too deep into that rabbit hole, we also see Job as this very devout man constantly praying for his children.
Yeah, he's like their intercessor.
Exactly. Dr. Phillips actually pointed out something really interesting about this. She said that it foreshadows how Job's friends completely fail to do the same for him when he's suffering.
Wow. That's a good point. They're supposed to be his support system, but they kind of fall apart.
In a way, yeah. And God even calls them out on it later. Dr. Phillips said some translations actually miss the nuance of the original Hebrew there, where God really emphasizes the importance of talking to him on behalf of someone else.
Hmm. So there's a right way and a wrong way to support someone who's hurting.
Seems that way, yeah.
Okay, so then, bam, tragedy strikes. Job loses everything. And his response, well, he doesn't hold back. His grief, it's like raw and honest, and he straight up questions God.
Can't you really blame him, can you? Imagine losing everything.
I mean, there's that powerful voice in chapter 16 where he describes God as his adversary, tearing him apart, crushing him.
It's heavy stuff, but it's also something that so many people, even today, can relate to. That feeling of just anguish and confusion when facing unimaginable pain. It's real.
Definitely real.
Yeah.
But even amidst all that, Job still holds on to a sliver of hope. He doesn't completely lose faith. He actually longs for a mediator, like someone to advocate for him in heaven.
Right. He still believes in a higher power, even when he's hurting.
And that brings us to, well, maybe one of the most famous lines from Job. I know my Redeemer lives. What do you make of that phrase? I mean, it's been interpreted in so many ways throughout history. What do you think it means, especially in the context of Job's suffering?
I think it's a statement of deep faith. Like, even though he's going through hell, he still believes deep down that he's not abandoned. He has a redeemer, someone who will vindicate him, someone who will make things right.
So in a way, it's about trusting that there's something beyond this pain.
Exactly. And on a personal level, I think it speaks to that human desire for hope, you know, for someone or something to deliver us from suffering, whether in this life or the next.
Like that instinct we have to believe that things will get better, that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of tough times, let's talk about Job's buddies, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. They show up to offer comfort, right? But their words quickly turn into accusations.
Yeah, like they're trying to put his suffering into this neat little theological box. You must have sinned. You must have done something wrong.
Yeah, as if they have it all figured out. But Dr. Phillips makes a good point. She says their theology is necessarily wrong.
Right.
It's more about how they apply it. Like they lecture him instead of just listening and being there for him.
It's like they're trying to win an argument instead of being a true friend.
Like when Eliphaz claims he received this message from, well, some kind of spiritual being, suggesting that Job's suffering must be because of some hidden sin.
Pretty harsh, right? Oof, yeah. It's tough to hear that from someone who's supposed to be on your side.
Do you think they actually believe that? Or are they just trying to make sense of the situation? Like, trying to uphold their own idea of justice in the world.
You know, it's hard to say, but I think there's probably a bit of both going on. I mean, they're grappling with this idea that God is just, that he rewards the good and punishes the bad. And then they see Job, this righteous dude, suffering like crazy. It doesn't compute.
It throws their whole worldview into question.
Exactly. And so maybe they try to fit Job into their pre-existing beliefs instead of letting his experience challenge them.
It seems like they're more worried about being right than actually empathizing with Job's pain.
It's a very human thing to do, unfortunately.
Yeah, it just adds to his suffering, right? It makes him feel even more isolated.
Absolutely. It's like they came to comfort him and ended up doing the opposite. And this is where things take a turn. God himself enters the scene and he answers Job, but he does it from a storm.
What's that about? Why a storm?
That's a good question. And that's where we'll pick up next time. So, yeah, the storm. It's pretty dramatic.
It is. And it gets you thinking, what's the significance of that? Why does God choose to answer Job from a storm?
Well, I think the storm itself is like this symbol, you know?
Yeah.
It represents the chaos of life, all those forces that are out of our control.
The stuff that just hits you out of nowhere.
Exactly. And even the most righteous people, they're not immune to that. And the fact that God speaks from within the storm, it's like he's not afraid to meet us in those dark moments, you know?
Instead of calming the storm first, he's right there in the middle of it.
Right. It's like he's saying, I'm here with you in the chaos. But here's the thing. Instead of directly answering Job's questions or addressing those accusations from his friends, God takes Job on this whirlwind tour of creation.
Like, look at all this stuff I made.
Exactly. And it's pretty awe-inspiring, right? It's like God is saying, before you question my justice, check out the vastness and complexity of all this. Do you really think you can grasp the scope of my power and wisdom?
It's a good point. We're so small and our perspective is so limited.
Totally. And then we get to this, well, this really fascinating creature. The Leviathan.
Yeah, the Leviathan. What's the deal with that thing? It's usually depicted as this, like, huge sea monster, right?
Right. And some translations try to say it's just a crocodile or something like that.
But Dr. Phillips says it's way more than that.
Oh, absolutely. She sees it as this symbol of, like, cosmic evil. She even connects it to that serpent from Genesis, you know.
The one that tempts Adam Eve.
Yeah, exactly. And in Job, God talks about the Leviathan's strength, its power. It's this unstoppable force. But then there's this twist. God presents the Leviathan as part of his creation. It's under his control.
So even this embodiment of chaos and evil, it's still subject to God's power.
Precisely. And this is a key takeaway from Job. It doesn't try to explain away suffering or give us easy answers. Instead, it acknowledges the reality of evil and suffering. And at the same time, it affirms God's ultimate power over it all.
That's pretty different from how a lot of other religious texts deal with evil, wouldn't you say?
For sure. It's more, well, realistic. It doesn't shy away from the tough stuff.
It's like saying, look, bad things happen. Evil exists, but there's still a higher power at work.
And I think that's a really empowering message, especially for us today, because let's face it, we live in a world where suffering and evil are very real. It's easy to feel overwhelmed by it all.
Yeah, like, where's God in all this mess?
Exactly. But Job reminds us that even in the midst of our pain, God is still there.
Like that image of God speaking from the storm. Mm. He doesn't give Job all the answers, but he reveals himself, his power and majesty, and it leaves Job speechless.
It's about trusting even when we don't understand.
And finding God in the midst of our suffering, not just waiting for it to end. Dr. Phillips even pointed out that Job's journey never even mentions the afterlife, right?
Right. His focus is on experiencing God in this life, in the here and now, despite all the pain and confusion.
That's interesting. So often we focus on heaven as the place where all our suffering will end, you know, like it's the ultimate reward.
Yeah. But Job seems to be saying that our relationship with God, it's meant to be lived out right now in the mess of human existence.
Yeah. Like that's where the real stuff happens.
And it's in that mess, in that struggle, where we often discover the depths of God's love and grace. Think about Job, right? His faith, his honesty with God, his acceptance of God's will, even when he doesn't get it.
He doesn't give up. He keeps going.
Exactly. And his story is like this mirror reflecting our own struggles with faith. It's a reminder that suffering is part of life. But it also shows us that our relationship with God can handle doubt and questions. In fact, it can become stronger because of them.
So it's not about avoiding the tough stuff.
Not at all. It's about leaning into it, being real with God, and knowing that he can handle it.
So we've talked about Job's character, his suffering, the way his friends kind of messed up, God's incredible response, even the Leviathan. But there's one more thing. Job gets everything back. Double what he lost, even new children. Is that like a reward for his righteousness, like he passed the test?
That's a great question. It's something a lot of people wonder about. But Dr. Phillips has a different perspective on this. She suggests that maybe the restoration isn't so much a reward, but more like a sign that the test is over.
It's like God saying, okay, we're done with that now.
Exactly. And it highlights God's grace, his mercy. It's not about Job earning his way back into God's favor. It's about God choosing to bless him, regardless of what happened.
So it's not transactional. It's about God's love and forgiveness.
Exactly. And it's interesting because in chapter 42, Job says, "I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes." He's not claiming to be sinless. He's acknowledging his own limitations and surrendering to God's will.
It sounds like this moment of humility, of realizing he doesn't have all the answers, that's what opens him up to truly receiving God's grace. But it's interesting that the text doesn't say what exactly he's repenting for.
Yeah, it leaves it open to interpretation. And that's part of what makes the book so powerful. It gives us room to wrestle with these ideas about faith, suffering, and God's justice. There's not one right answer.
We have to grapple with it ourselves.
We do. Now, we've covered a lot in this deep dive. Job's struggles, the friends who tried to help but kind of made things worse, God's amazing response, even the Leviathan. But Dr. Phillips also points out something else that we can't forget. God's interaction with Job's friends at the end.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't let him off the hook, does he?
He definitely doesn't. And there's a big lesson there for all of us about what true friendship really means, especially when someone is going through something really tough. And that's what we'll explore next time.
So we left off with those friends, right? Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar.
Yeah, those guys. God has some words for them at the end, doesn't he? He does. And it's interesting, like, you know, it's easy to just focus on Job's happy ending, his restoration. But what God says to the friends, it's like this whole other layer of meaning, you know?
Yeah, like, what's the takeaway for us there?
Right. Dr. Phillips really emphasizes this point in her lecture, and it's about how we should, well, how we should act towards those who are hurting, you know, what real friendship looks like.
So it's not just about Job. It's about how we treat each other.
Exactly. And I was struck by something she said about how God criticizes the friends for not speaking to him on Job's behalf. Remember how Job longed for a mediator, someone to stick up for him before God?
He wanted someone in his corner.
Yes. But his friends, they were too busy lecturing him, you know? Too busy trying to explain his suffering with their theological formulas.
So they missed the point.
They did. They were so focused on being right, on winning the argument, that they forgot to just be there for Job. They forgot to listen, to offer compassion, to actually pray for him.
It makes you think about how we respond to people in our own lives when they're going through tough times, right?
Totally. It's so easy to want to fix things, to offer advice. But sometimes the best thing we can do is just listen, just be present with their pain, you know, acknowledge their suffering without judgment.
And pray for them.
Exactly. Intercede on their behalf. That's what those friends failed to do. They were so busy speaking at Job that they forgot to speak to God for Job.
And that's what God calls them out on. It's like a lesson in true friendship.
It is. It's about walking alongside someone, offering support, even when we don't understand what they're going through. We don't need to have all the answers. We don't need a perfect theological explanation for their suffering. We just need to show up, be present, offer love and compassion.
It's powerful, you know. It really makes you think about your own relationships. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Job, what stands out to you? What's the biggest takeaway?
For me, it's that Job isn't about getting easy answers. It's about facing the tough questions, acknowledging the mystery of God's ways. You know, why bad things happen, why good people suffer. We don't get a simple explanation.
It's more about the journey, about wrestling with those questions and finding God in the midst of it all.
Yes. And being honest with God, bringing our doubts and questions to him, and ultimately holding on to that hope that even when we don't understand, he's still there.
What a powerful message. Mm-hmm. Job's story really challenges us, right?
It does. It challenges us to think differently about suffering, about God, and about how we treat each other.
Well, this deep dive into Job has been, well, it's been quite a journey. Thanks for exploring it with us, and we hope it's given you something to think about. Mm-hmm. Maybe even spark some conversations about faith and suffering in your own life. Thanks for listening.